This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Welcome to Ladies Talking Leafs. I'm Chris.
And I'm Syl.
And we're back after a couple big wins for the Leafs versus the Flames and then the Canucks. And now the team is heading off to Stockholm, Sweden for the NHL Global Series for games versus the Detroit Red Wings on Friday, November 17th, and then versus the Minnesota Wild on Sunday, November 19th.
Yes, and as you know, Ladies Talking Leafs will be in Stockholm following the Leafs, and we have been given NHL media access for the Global Series. So this means we will have media access to the games, team practices, and the NHL Global Fan Tour. So we also want to let you know that we will be live streaming a special episode of the podcast on Sunday, November 19th at 3 p.m. Eastern, Toronto time, and 12 p.m. for our listeners out west.
Yeah, so be sure to not miss our live stream from Stockholm, and you won't miss it as long as you subscribe to our YouTube channel at LTL1917. So remember to hit that subscribe button, and and there's tons of stuff on our YouTube channel that you can see there too. If you have any questions about the Global Series, you can share them in the comments of our social media posts or DM us. We'll be posting a lot about the Global Series, obviously, our experience across all our social media channels, YouTube, X, which is formerly Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and Threads. And again, our handle for all of our social media platforms is at LTL1917. So be sure to hit that subscribe or follow button, and we'll keep you up to date on everything Leafs.
Yeah, so it will be our first real live stream. So hopefully not too many technical difficulties, but we are excited to bring you all of the kind of behind the scenes information that we gather during our time there. So before we get to the show, we're excited to announce a new partnership with Bet Online as well. You can find the latest NHL game day bets as well as props and futures. And currently Bet Online has the Leafs at +275 behind Boston to win the Atlantic Division.
Yeah, so the last of the major pro sports leagues is off and rolling, and college basketball is ready to go as well. BetOnline remains your top spot for all your live betting action and contests. NHL, NFL, college football, and UFC are all in full swing. BetOnline is your number one source for wagering, news, odds, trends, and predictions.
All the pucks and hoops, betting action, along with every sport available at your fingertips with both desktop and mobile access at any time. Head to BetOnline today and remember to use our promo code BELIEVE, B-L-E-A-V, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, where the game starts. So please gamble responsibly. If you or someone you know needs support or advice, reach out to Connex Ontario or an organization near you. place your limits, and stay within it. And now it's time to get on to the show. So our regular segments, The Good, The Bad, and The Ugly, and the Ladies Talking Leafs highlight reel, will be back when we return from Sweden. Although there are some pretty amazing highlights that we've seen over the last couple of games. Yeah. We are starting off this show with a Leaf talk, though, about the games from this past week. So we'll get into a little bit of those details and highlights that we noticed. And for our third period segment, we are very excited to have sports journalist and NHL Network, NHL on TNT, and WWE Monday Night Raw host Jackie Redmond on with us to talk about the Leafs. So without any further ado, let's talk Leafs.
Okay, so yeah, we're going to do a bit of a quick review of the games from this past week, starting with the, the game versus the Lightning. Seems like a long time ago, but it was a comeback win, actually, that one, being down 4-1, and we managed to pull it out 6-5 in overtime. But Matthews and Marner, of course, leading the way on that one. And Kelly Yonkrok actually has picked it up a little bit, actually, this past week when it comes to his production, his offensive production, got a couple of goals, including the OT winner. So that was a good start to the week, right? But then it went down again. It's like this up and down cycle that they have there going versus the Senators, obviously. And what Sheldon Keefe said about that game, I guess it really showed what our defense has been this season. He just said, like, about the Leafs' goals against this season, it's out of control.
Mm-hmm. Well, that game for sure was out of control because they seemed to have, you know, everything was going all okay. And then all of a sudden, it just fell apart and everybody was scrambling. And then before you knew it, there's three goals scored, like, one after the other. So, it was very messy. That was definitely the game that Klingberg stood out as having real problems defensively. And then, of course, it came out that, maybe he has a little bit of an injury. Don't know for sure if that is the case. But the only thing, really good thing that came out of that game was that Nylander managed to extend his point streak. And so he's now at 15 games. So,
Yeah, that was good. The other thing from that Lightning game that I thought was just a joke as well was just John Cooper's comments after the game saying, like,
oh, yeah.
He is just a classic when it comes to his quotes. They're just saying that.
Never wants to give credit
exactly
to the other team.
Yeah. Yeah, it's always the same that way. And again, he was like that after that game saying, we just stopped playing, basically. So,
yeah, he's the kind of guy that when he talks like that, you just want to punch him in the face.
Yeah. Yeah. But then, okay, so then it did get better the last couple of games, the home and home for the Hockey Hall of Fame game, I guess, on Friday night versus the Flames. 5-4 shootout win. And that one, like Syl was just saying, Klingberg was scratched for that game because of his awful play, not just in that game versus the Senators, but even before that. But there were a couple of glaring issues there in that game versus the Sens. But in that game, like, we were up 4-1. It seems like 4-1 is the score that is haunting us all the time. But we're up 4-1 early in the second period, and then the Flames came back to tie it up, obviously. But we got the extra point with Max Domi scoring the shootout winner. So that was good. It was a fun game. Looked like the crowd sounded like the crowd was really into it too. So
yeah, actually I like that for Domi as well. It was a beautiful shootout goal, by the way. And I think that he is starting to get more and more confident now that he's playing center. To me, it looks like that's where he should have been all along. Like, isn't that how it feels? Like,
yeah.
It just seems like he is now comfortable. He's able to play to his strengths there. Some of the passes, like, that's probably got to be his number one skill set as a playmaker. And it's really showing. And the fact that Yarncroc has been moved down to play with him, I think that is getting the most out of Yarncroc's offensive skill set as well. If he's playing on the top line with Marner and Austin Matthews, basically his job is to make sure that they're able to get the puck and they're able to make the plays. And you're not able to reap the benefit of his awesome shot that he has. And him playing with Domi right now, there's definitely chemistry there. And man, Nick Robertson is a bulldog on that line as well. So really happy for him. And I really think that he's going to stick now.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it seems like they've Sheldon Keefe has may have found some chemistry there with a third line. And that game though too was Ryan Reeves obviously didn't have the greatest of games versus the versus the Flames, and he ended up being sat out for last night's game versus the Canucks, which that to me was, and I think for all fans, like, that was the most complete game that the Leafs have played this season, I think, through 15 games. And Klingberg miraculously is recovered and back from his injury, whatever that was. Ryan Reeves was out, and Bobby McMahon was called up. So that, the game had a little bit of everything, with some fisticuffs, a couple of fights. The bottom six contributed big time in the game. And of course, Willie, like we said, extended his point streak now up to 15 games. So he's taking it on the road with us to Sweden. So, I really liked that game last night versus the Canucks. And it was great to see that fourth line, David Kampf and Noah Gregor and Bobby McMahon, just the speed that they had together. And I mean, it's only the one game, obviously, since Bobby McMahon came up, but it's just finally, it seems to be coming together anyways with the bottom six, and we'll see what happens now on the road to to Sweden.
These last two games is obviously the most production we've had from the bottom six at all. Last night's game versus Vancouver, I also thought that's the best Kampf looked all season so far. You're not having to worry probably about the defense and carrying the whole load for that fourth line, I think has made a difference. He had a spring in his step, and of course he scored the goal. So, he looked so much better as well.
There was a lot of penalties in that game too, right? We were on totally the PK a lot, yeah, which was ridiculous, but they managed to, I mean, the first couple, obviously there was the bench minor too.
I still don't know, like, why they are doing so bad on the line changes, and it's actually having a pretty significant impact on the season so far. So they've definitely got to get that together, because that's just boneheaded stupidity. Especially in last night's game, when it was like it was a power play for Vancouver, and they how do you do that? That is just completely does not make any sense, and they should get in a lot of crap for that.
Yeah. So, yeah, for sure.
Anyway, overall, it was a pretty good week for the Leafs. Started out not so well. I don't know. It's a little bit of a roller coaster like it normally is. But anyways, overall, pretty good week. And for our third period segment to talk about it and overall what's going on in the league, we are so excited to welcome NHL reporter and sports journalist Jackie Redmond to the show.
Okay, so for our third period segment, we want to welcome to the show renowned sports journalist Jackie Redmond.
Yes, Jackie grew up in London, Ontario, and of course is a huge Leaf fan. And many of our listeners will know Jackie from her time on Sportsnet covering the NHL. Today, Jackie covers the NHL on NHL Network, NHL on TNT, and she's also a backstage interviewer for another hard-hitting sport, WWE Monday Night Raw. So welcome to the show, Jackie.
Ladies, I am so excited to be here and talk to a couple of fellow Leaf fans that also happen to be women. And apparently I like sports where they hit each other. I don't know.
I was looking at the WWE stuff that you're doing. Yeah, it's quite interesting. I'm not into the wrestling, but it's very different.
It is. Yes, it is absolutely a totally different world. I'm getting asked a lot about it right now because it's obviously something a bit newer for me.
Yeah.
And I just tell everyone I've never felt more like I'm in showbiz, baby. Like I've never felt so close to show business in my life. But it's super fun and I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, well, that's
awesome
great.
That you can branch out and do all these things. So anyways, let's get into our questions for you. So Chris, you want to start us off?
Yeah. Yeah. So I actually wanted to ask you about, before we get into the Leafs, about the Heritage sure. Classic. You were at the Heritage Classic at Commonwealth Stadium in Edmonton, and you looked really cold. I'm just wondering, was it cold?
you know what's so funny about that is I've done numerous outdoor games. Like I did the Winter Classic at Citi Field in New York, and they had record-breaking cold temperatures that day. So like nothing is colder than that. And when I got to Edmonton during the day, you know, we were at the venue all day. And so during the day, the sun was out and I'm out there, I've got my coat unzipped and I'm like, oh my, everyone says Edmonton's so cold. This isn't that bad. It's fine. Fast forward to like 6 hours later and I'm like, can I go inside to get a coffee just to hold on to out here? So it didn't start out cold, but it got very cold by the time the game actually started and the sun went down and I didn't have those rays hitting me anymore. But yeah, it was cold.
How many of those outdoor games have you done so far?
Oh gosh. I have done every Winter Classic since 2017. So that's six Winter Classics. And then I've done a couple of outdoor games at least. I did the Nashville game. I did obviously the Heritage Classic that I just did. I'm going to ballpark it around maybe nine or 10 outdoor games. Wow. I'm going to be in Seattle for the Winter Classic this year. So I'm excited about that.
That's cool.
Yeah, I guess I've got some experience in the outdoor venue space. That's for sure. And you know what? You don't ever get used to cold. Like people see me all the time. I'll be like, I'm so cold. And because I work with a lot of Americans being based in the US, like, aren't you Canadian? And I'm like, yeah, but like cold is cold. Like you don't just get immune to cold.
Yeah. Did you do the Ann Arbor one, like with the Leafs?
No, I missed that one. Okay, I wish I did that one. That was right now, before was I came. Yes, I heard. Yeah. I knew people that went to that game, but I sadly watched that one on TV.
All right, so let's get into the Leafs now then. So we are 15 games into the Leafs season. The record is 8-5-2, heading over to Sweden, obviously, for the NHL Global Series. So they got a couple of wins recently versus the Flames and the Canucks, but it hasn't been the greatest start to the season. So how are you feeling about the Leafs after 15 games? Are you feeling a little better about them now, or are you worried?
I don't know how to feel is the best way that I can answer that question. I feel like it's been peaks and valleys and a bit of a roller coaster of a start to the season. I mean, I'm going to show my bias fully here because this is a Leafs podcast. So I feel like I'm allowed. Like, thank goodness the Edmonton Oilers are having so many problems because totally. I feel like if not for the Oilers and what's going on in Edmonton, although they did get a win yesterday, I feel like the heat in Toronto would be scorching hot in TO, even with the last couple of games and the wins that they've managed to get. But to answer your question, I think I just feel differently every game. I don't think we've seen a stretch of consistent hockey yet. And so like Sheldon Keefe and I think the rest of the Leafs, we're still trying to figure out what exactly Toronto is. Who are the Toronto Maple Leafs in 2023? Obviously, the roster has changed, and I think we're seeing the growing pains of the coaching staff trying to figure out exactly where everybody fits. And, you know, watching the last game, I know you're just so people listening to this podcast. I mean, the last game that we've seen is the Leafs play the Vancouver Canucks. And all I could think about after that game and today is Nick Robertson and how much that has, like, it's how weird and how amazing for him if it turns out that he kind of ends up being the piece of the puzzle that kind of makes it all work. Because I feel like that's the best the third line has looked since they brought him up and he started playing and they put them together. So I'm starting to feel a little bit better, but I, you know, tried and true Leaf fan, I'm always going to be worried. Even when things are good, I'm worried. So I'm starting to feel a little bit better, at least about the forward groups and what that could and might look like moving forward. But I'm still concerned about the back end. I'm still concerned about the goaltending. And I think more than anything, for me, you know, I said this the other day, you know, Austin Matthews could put up 70 goals this year. That would be awesome to watch. William Nylander could have a career year and earn all of the money. And I just don't know that it will matter. I think it's going to come down to a lot of other things. And so that's what scares me, is that the Leafs core four or core three, however you might look at it, they could do their thing and it still might not be enough. So we'll see.
Yeah, because the team is so, I was mentioning to Syl this last show, that it's so much, you can really see the top heaviness in the lineup, right? Like, if until the last couple of games, it looks like Sheldon Keefe has got a, I guess, somewhat of a third line now. And and then I guess there wasn't much of the bottom six contributing to the games prior to the, I guess, last night, basically, versus the Canucks, right? So that, yeah.
And can they do it for a whole year, right? Like, that's the thing. Right. It's like, we could have a week of the third line contributing and that'll be great, right? But can they do it for a whole season? And most importantly, can they do it in the postseason when life gets a lot harder for the top six?
Yeah. And are you a fan of Sheldon Keefe? Just
much like the answer to my last question, I feel like there's ebbs and flows. You know, there's been times where I'm like, this isn't the right coach for this team. And then there's times, you know, and I've said this a lot this season in particular, because, you know, goalies and coaches take the brunt of the heat when things are going wrong. That's just naturally what we do as sports fans. And so he's been taking heat. And I know PK Subban came out last week and is really calling for Sheldon Keefe's head. But I really, you know, as someone, I would say I've been pretty hard and critical of Sheldon Keefe over the last handful of years. But I think this season he is far from the top of the list of their problems for me. I don't think he's the reason that it's been a tough or slow or whatever word you want to use to describe the start of the season. I don't think I'd even put Sheldon Keefe in the top three of the issues for the Toronto Maple Leafs right now. So, you know, most of my friends and family would be like, oh, Jackie's always all over Keefe. But in this instance, in the short term of just the window, or I guess the viewpoint of just this season, I actually don't think Sheldon Keefe's been the biggest problem. I think there's some things he could have done differently or better in terms of my thing with Keefe, and I'll get your guys' opinion on this. You know, I find it interesting the way that he decides to, you know, dole out punishment, for lack of a better word, where he chooses to demote people, promote people. Sometimes his choices in commentary after the games, I find interesting. You know, the two biggest examples I can think of this season was to take John Klingberg. This was a few games ago. Mm-hmm. And, you know, obviously Klingberg, you know, hasn't had an amazing season. But to take him off PP1, it's like, that's the one thing he had. It was like the one thing that Klingberg could take confidence from. And there was a game a few games ago where he demoted him and took him off PP1. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was an interesting tactic. Obviously, we've seen Klingberg back up there since then. And then the other one is, I don't remember which game it was. I think it was against Tampa, where they went down 4-1 and he pulled Samsonov because Samsonov had allowed 3 goals on 4 shots or whatever it was. And I understand the pull, but the Leafs rallied back to win that game. And after the game, they asked Sheldon Keefe about Samsonov. And instead of just saying, you know what, it wasn't his night, he'll bounce back and moving on, Keefe said, well, you can't let in 3 goals on 4 shots. Like, he has to be better. It's like, bro, they came back, they won the game. Like, I'm sure Samsonov feels bad enough. He understands why he was pulled. I just didn't understand the doubling down there. And I think with a goalie like Samsonov, it's very clear to me that he rides the waves of how he's performing. If he doesn't have a good game, he feels it, he wears it. He has a good game, he gains a lot of confidence from it. So it's like little things like that where I get a little bit like, I don't know. But I don't think she'll. Yeah. That's just my thoughts. What do you guys think?
Well, I agree with you 100% on that. Like, even, you know, what he did with Bertuzzi, you know, last week, you know, like, you know, basically benching him for like full parts of the game, moving him down the lineup. Like, I was speaking with Chris about this earlier. Like, I feel like sometimes he's not doing enough to put his players, especially the new guys, in a position to succeed. Like, it's not just the new players' responsibility to fit in. There has to be some role on the players that are already existing to help them integrate, you know, to feed them a little bit. And also, you know, like he's already feeling bad enough, probably, like, you know, really, you know, taking away his ice time so early on in such a strong way, like it was so noticeable. I find sometimes he doesn't always seem to put the players in a position to succeed. And he's not always, except for Nylander, critical enough of some of his star players, you know, in times where really they should be called out and benched. Like, you know, John Cooper did that last year, you know, very obviously with Stamkos and Kucherov. It's like the last year, there's a whole thing about how he walked back all of the stuff, you know, the criticism that he put out there. And there was a question as to whether that was, you know, Dubas telling him to do that or not. But yeah, I find like sometimes those guys are a little bit too protected and he picks his certain people to kind of take it out on. But then that causes a bit of a rift too in the locker room, potentially, no? Like when, you know?
Potentially, for sure. I think it's one of these situations where, you know, I think Sheldon Keefe is a very emotional guy. I think he's obsessed with winning. You know, sometimes he makes decisions in games where he's so focused on just winning that game that I think, and again, this is just my opinion, obviously, I think he loses sight of the bigger picture of like, okay, what is important in the long run as opposed to just winning this game? And, you know, for me to kind of echo what you're saying is it's like he has no patience with his depth players and all the patience in the world for his core guys. And I don't know that that is necessarily the way to go if you want the entire team to buy in and you want, like, because you're going to need, like, Sheldon, whether or not you constructed this roster or had any input whatsoever, doesn't matter. This is the roster that you need to make work. And so you're going to need Bertuzzi to buy in for you, to fight when the going gets tough, to be the guy when your big guns don't have the answer, to step up and do it for you and to fight for you. And so, you know, those relationships are really important. And all of those little things over the course of a season, I think, can break you or make you. And, you know, hopefully, you know, we're only, whatever you said, 15 games into the season. We're starting to see this team come together and those pieces start to fit. But I think it's criticism, I think, that at this point in Keefe's career is warranted because we've seen it over and over and over, right? Like even, I mean, I find it laughable that last year we even said Sheldon Keefe benched Marner. It was like one shift. Like, I don't even count it. You know what I mean? Like you referenced Cooper benching a couple of his star players. He benched them for a whole period, the entire third period of that game. That's a benching. You sit for one shift. It's like, that doesn't count. That's not getting benched. That's catching your breath.
All right. Okay. Yeah, no, I.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
The thing with me and Sheldon Keefe, I don't like the fact that he's there's no consistency in the lineup with the forwards. Like he's always tinkering all the time. Yeah. I would just like to see, and I think from the player standpoint too, they like to kind of like be given more than a few games to get that chemistry going. So that's my thing with him. He sticks to his pairings. Like he has Tavares, Nylander, Matthews, Marner.
Yeah, his twos.
Yeah, sort of thing, right? But then he's always, it's always like, okay, who's playing the other side now, sort of thing, right? Like with those pairings. And then on the third line, like finally, he seems to have found something with putting Domi at center and then Yarncroke on the one side and Robertson, basically. So, yeah, we'll see. But going back to the new players, we just want to ask you, I guess the new players that Brad Treveling brought in, like they've had a tough time fitting into the lineup like we were talking about. And a lot of people say it's probably like about the pressures of playing in Toronto. What do you think about like why Bertuzzi and Domi too until the last couple of games, like in particular, is it just that they need time to adjust, do you think, or is it about Keith, how he deployed them in the lineup, or do you think it is this whole thing about Toronto being the center of the hockey universe and they can't handle it?
You know, I think it's interesting because I think, you know, every player is different. I know Domi, that's kind of been a push narrative for him because of who his dad is and sort of the pressure that comes with that. I don't know that the pressure would be like the number one reason that either of those guys is not fitting in. You know, I've interviewed Domi before. I've had the chance to get to know him a little bit over the years. He's played for a lot of American teams. So we've crossed paths quite a bit. And he just doesn't strike me as the type of person that's really intimidated by the stage. I think he wants it, to be honest with you. I think he's one of those guys that kind of thrives when given the opportunity and likes that sort of thing. So I don't know that that's it. I would lean more to the opinion that, you know, there hasn't been a lot of consistency and there's been, you know, a lot expected of players early and from the coach and the coaching staff. And I think it's hard to really, you know, get your feet under you when things are constantly changing. It's changing and changing and changing. You know, I can only, you know, draw from my own experience as a human being and starting a couple of new jobs in the last 2 years and moving and dealing with all of those different things. And I think most people would tell you that, like, you need that few weeks before you really feel comfortable at a new job with your new coworkers. Now, in this case, these guys spend all day, every day together, spend a lot more time together than your average, you know, couple of employees, especially with the travel. But I do think that it's important for guys to get comfortable with each other before they start feeling not the pressure from the fans, but the pressure from their own coach to make it work, to make something happen when it's like, bro, I've been here for like 4 games and I'm already like, you're taking away ice time and you're doing this and you're doing that. And it's like, you know, you're trying to get your bearings straight and trying to make it work with certain players. Like, they got to get to know each other too. And they have to get to know each other within a specific system that their coaches want them to play. So I think it's probably more to do with that. I also think in Domi's case in particular, you know, when they acquired him and Toronto media, you know, myself, I'll include myself in it. You know, we have a tendency to make players that go to Toronto more than what they are. And then the fans expect them to be something that maybe they're not. Like, a lot of the commentary around Domi coming to the Leafs. Now, I'm taking the whole Ty relationship out of this. Like, obviously, we're going to talk about that and it's going to be a big story. But I felt like he was made out to be something that he's just not. I mean, there's a reason that, you know, he has played for whatever it is, like 6 different teams since Montreal or whatever it is. It's a handful of teams. There's a reason for that. And, you know, it's because he is not a top six guy. He is a bottom six guy. And I think he needs to be in the right scenario to be an effective player. So I think that's kind of, I think Domi suffered from that a little bit too. Just kind of, you know, maybe Bertuzzi as well. Just the narratives behind those players before they had ever even touched the ice with Toronto. I think we were expecting maybe a little more than what they are. I mean, same with Ryan Reeves. I mean, Ryan Reeves is like, you know, he's on the tail end of his career. He's a guy that's bounced around. And you look at his ice time in other markets in the last couple of years. And that should tell you enough about Ryan Reeves to know kind of where he's at and what he can do for a team. And, you know, I actually feel really bad for Ryan right now because I know he cares. So that's going to be interesting to see how that all plays out. But hopefully they're all going to figure it out. That.
I was just going to say that exact same thing, that like you can see the frustration that they have. And maybe that's what it is that they hear what's being said about them, I'm sure. And so they want to perform up to that level. And if it's not going for them, like you can just see it, like like Ryan Reeves, 100%, I was thinking, I feel sorry for the guy too, because you can see how badly he wants to contribute.
Yeah,
you know, in the way that everybody wants him to, right? So, basically be able to utilize him the way he's meant to be utilized, and they're probably going to have to pick their spots, and it'll have to come up to with matchups or whatever like that, you know, like certain teams that it's a better fit for him to play. But you could see, like, with the fourth line, with him not there, like, you know, Gregor could fully realize his speed. You know, without him being there, right? Slowing them down. So it's sort of, we felt bad for that reason. Good for the outcome, but yeah.
I think a lot of people felt bad for Ryan Reeves. You know, Ryan Reeves has been an impactful player at certain times and in his career. But, like, you know, this, you know, time catches up to you quick in this league. And, you know, you see it happen all over the league, especially for a player like Ryan, whose impact is a lot different. You know, the game catches up to you. And I just don't know that he can keep up anymore. And that's sad. That makes me sad for him. So, but they might, the Leafs are going to need him. Like, injuries are inevitable. Things are going to happen. So, you know, we haven't seen the last of Ryan Reeves just yet. Well, I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
It was funny last night, though, too, how they versus the Canucks, where it seemed like they wanted to drop the gloves.
Yeah.
The Canucks were like, Ryan Reeves isn't in the lineup, and now's the time to drop the gloves.
Now everyone wants to fight. Like, it's just like, I love Gio, but, like, bro, we need you. Like, I can't be having you hurt yourself in a fight.
All right, so let's look a little bit at the rest of the NHL now. And, you know, with the start to the season, what teams are surprising you the most, like either good or bad?
Well, I mean, we've been talking about the Boston Bruins taking a step back for only 3 years, and it just won't happen. Like, it's outrageous to me. And that's like the Leaf fan in me just being like, I thought Boston was supposed to regress. I thought, like, they just lost. I mean, they lost Patrice Bergeron, like the heart and soul of their team and a very important player in terms of where he plays in the lineup. And yet here they are just chugging along. And so you have to give credit to Boston. They've really built a winning culture there. It goes to show what good goaltending gets you in the NHL as well. I think the Vancouver Canucks last night, you know, watching them, and they've obviously had such a great start. It's like, yeah, well, when Thatcher Demko is healthy and you get a goalie that can give you a chance every night, you're going to win some hockey games, even if maybe you don't deserve to. So to go back to your question, though, I think Boston is a surprise for me. I can think the Florida Panthers, we'll see what happens over the course of 82 games. But, you know, I really expected them to not be good at all. And they're not lighting it up, but they're doing better than I anticipated that they would. And then Edmonton is a shock. Like, that's just, it is what it is. I mean, I wasn't predicting them to win a Stanley Cup like a lot of people in Canada were, but I certainly did not have them at the bottom of the league outside of San Jose 15 games into the season. Like, I am shocked that they have had such a poor start. And now, you know, they've made their coaching change, and we'll see if that'll be enough. That's
what's the crazy percent, do you think, that they can crawl their way back into a playoff spot?
Oh, man. You know, I'm going to put it over 50%, only because they have two of the best players in the world in McDavid and Draisaitl. If there's two players that can put a team on their back and pull off some crazy 10, 11, 12 game winning streak, like, I'm going to put my money on those two. They just need to get some saves. Like, they need to get some goaltending.
I don't know, like, if Skinner can carry that load, but I guess we'll see if they make some kind of move there.
Yeah, I mean, things are going to have to happen, obviously. They've started with the coach. We'll see. I mean, I know that there's been some games where they've had a ton of chances and they just haven't been able to score, which is a crazy thing. That in and of itself is something I didn't think I'd be saying about the Oilers in any respect to start the season. But I guess we'll see. I mean, Arizona's another surprise too. I didn't think that they were going to be relevant. They are. So
is Alex Kerfoot lighting it up down there?
It's just, this is what I love about hockey. Like, every single year, you just throw out the majority of the preseason predictions, because there's always teams that we expect to do really well that seemingly maybe fall off a cliff or just don't have it, or deal with key injuries and suffer as a result. And there's always teams that we expect to not to do anything that then, you know, go on a crazy run. So you just never know in this league. That's what I love about it. It's one of the things I love about it.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, we'll see how it all pans out in the end. But now we're going to switch gears a little bit. We're going to do a little Q&A with you. We have a special segment that we like to call For the Fans, just so we can get to know Jackie as a person and a fan. So if you're game for that, we'll do that.
Of course, let's do it.
So Chris.
All right. So to start us off, we know you're a Leaf fan, obviously a huge Leaf fan through and through. And who is your favorite player growing up, and who do you like to watch now?
Okay, so growing up, there's two. Number one, Darcy Tucker was always my favorite. He was a lot of people's favorite for my generation. He was so passionate. He was a bit of a crazy man, but he also was a pretty good player as well. I mean, he got to play with Sundin at one point near the tail end, but I just loved that he was passion personified, him and Shane Corson together as the crazy duo that they were in terms of teammates. So I always loved Darcy Tucker. My family, we had a family dog that's name was Tucker, rest in peace to Tucker. So he was definitely my number one in terms of just like absolute favorite. And then I love Matt Sundin. I just grew up where he was our best player, and you know, he was the guy doing it for us every single season, him and Cujo. So those would be my two picks for when I was growing up. And then now, you mean my favorite player to watch in terms of the Leafs? I swear this isn't recency bias. It's Nylander. I just love his swagger. I love his personality. I love that when he, you know, as Austin Matthews famously said, you know, when he's going, or whatever that quote was. I just think everything about him for me makes him sort of this player that you can't take your eyes off, even when he's like dogging it or not playing well or not fact checking. I find him so much fun to watch, regardless of how well he's playing. And right now he happens to be playing amazing. So I love it.
Have you had a chance to interview him ever?
No, I haven't. I have never interviewed William Nylander. I would love to. Maybe this year will be the year. I go to All-Star Weekend every year. Right now, he's looking like an All-Star. So we will see. But yeah, I've interviewed quite a few of the current Leafs, but not Nylander.
Okay, so we've read that you played a lot of sports growing up, and hockey, of course, was one of them. So what position did you play when you were playing hockey? And did you have a certain number that you liked to wear? And if so, did it have any kind of meaning behind it?
So I was a left winger and a center, depending how old I was and which team I was talking about, whether it was my competitive team or my high school team. So I was both of those positions. I think I liked playing the wing better. I mean, I was my strongest skill as a hockey player was my skating. I was a really good skater, which is why I should probably enjoy center better. But center's a lot of work. Like, I just like center's so much work. Winger, it's a lot of work, but it's different. So I enjoyed playing the wing better. And then my number, I was number 22. I was also number 93 at one point. But for some reason, I don't even really have a reason. I just liked the number 22. It's still in my email account, my personal one. Well, I don't know if I should say that, but whatever. it is my personal email. But there's not really a reason why. I just kind of picked it. I was just a kid I just picked a number.
Two great numbers. Number 22, Rick Vive, who was the first Leaf to score the 50 goals. And number 93, of course, is Doug Gilmore.
Yeah, right? I wore 93 in high school and people made fun of me. And I was like, how are you going to make fun of me for wearing Gilmore's number? It's Doug Gilmore. Anyways.
Totally.
I did. I got made fun of a lot for that for some reason.
Interesting. All right. So going on to the next question, we relate very much to your personal story, sharing your love of hockey with your dad and listening to call-in shows together. Was there a moment that you can point out where you realized that a career in sports media was not only a viable option, but that you could turn your passion into such a success that you are today?
I think it first was on my radar when I got to high school. I went to grade school and then like went to a high school where like all these different schools sort of came together. It was very like, I went to a small grade school and then a really big high school, which was quite an eye opener for me as a kid. And I think when I got there, you know, I was meeting new people and had a lot of different classmates from all over the city. And I kept getting this very similar reaction from a lot of my male classmates. You know, the Leafs would come up, or any team would come up, the Red Wings, Leafs, whatever, but predominantly the Leafs. And I would, you know, insert myself in said conversation and talk about the game the night before. And, you know, on numerous occasions that first year, the ninth grade, I had, you know, male classmates just be like, how do you know so much about the Leafs? How do you know about hockey? Da, 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 da. And like, hopefully that doesn't happen as much today, but, you know, it was very common for me and I hadn't really experienced that before. And so for the first time, I was kind of like, oh, like this is like surprising to people. Like this is something that is maybe unique about me. And so at that time, you know, I started to think about, oh, could I work in sports? I never necessarily thought about being, you know, a hockey reporter or being on air necessarily that early. I was more just kind of, maybe I could work in sports, you know, maybe I could do marketing or PR. I started like thinking about all the different things that I could do within the space. But as you know, my high school career kept going and progressing, I started, and you know, this says a lot about high school where, you know, we're all awkward and we're growing and we're going through puberty and like all these different weird things. And we're trying to decide what to do with our lives. One thing I knew was that I never felt more confident than when I was talking about hockey. And that's where I felt comfortable and I felt like myself. And I wasn't, you know, I wasn't like being a typical teenager, like thinking about everything that I was saying and like worrying about like, you know, fitting in or whatever. I was just like saying what I felt about the team and about the sport. And so I just kind of followed that. And, you know, it's worked out, thankfully. But I think that that's really where that drive came from, was just like, I feel like I kind of belong in this space and I don't feel that everywhere else. So I just kind of followed it.
I love that actually. And yeah. And I think we relate a lot to that too, don't we, Christine?
I was gonna say it's like, it's almost exactly like similar stories for me, both me and Syl, like growing
that.
Up and talking hockey. Yeah, mm-hmm. Definitely.
So getting into the sports media a little bit more. So like in a business where, you know, it's encouraged for you to be a little bit more unbiased, you know, one of the things that we really love about you is that the fan in you still comes through. So have you ever had any pressure to kind of tone that down at all? And how do you balance the fandom with the unbiased nature that is sometimes expected in this business?
You know what? I got a lot more, I don't want to say criticism. I think that's harsh, but I got a lot more. I had a lot of conversations with people early in my career about being a little bit too homerish or biased or just letting the fact that I was a Leafs fan maybe show just a little bit too much. I think that the industry itself has changed so much since I got into it. I think it's a lot more accepted now for sports, I'll say personalities, to be open about the teams that they root for and to kind of in a fun way show their bias, but never to show their bias when it comes to, you know, factual things or news stories or, you know, the serious parts of the reporting game. So for me, I've always just been like, listen, I am who I am. I couldn't help it if I tried. Like I tried to be a super serious broadcaster when I first started. It was bad. It was uncomfortable. I was not good at it. So I kind of made a decision early on that I was either going, regardless of what happened, whether I succeeded or I failed, I was going to do it just being me, whatever that meant. I just was not going to hold back who I was. And, you know, luckily for me, I think that, like I said, I think the industry has changed a lot and is more accepting of that from people in certain roles. Like you can't be Elliot Friedman and be out there like openly rooting. No. You know what I mean? Because he is like an insider. He is a source of information. He's he is, you know, a very well respected, and he's earned that over the course of his career. But I think for someone like me who is, you know, just trying to entertain and talk about the game and cover it as best as I can across the league, I think that it's okay. But I'm still very mindful of it when it comes to, you know, if we're talking like for a you know, a hypothetical, if we're talking about a trade that involves the Leafs, I am still going to try to be as objective as I possibly can. But I used to argue with one of my colleagues all the time, because I used to say when I covered all sports, I used to do the highlight desk. And I would openly say on the desk that, like, I didn't know anything about soccer. And I would just, like, sometimes I would even just pass him the soccer highlight packs. And I'd be like, you do them. I don't know anything about soccer. And he was like, don't you worry, like, about your credibility. And I have always maintained that, like, if I'm honest with the audience, that's where I will get my credibility from, is by being honest about the things I know and the things I don't know, the things I'm passionate about and the things that I'm not passionate about. So I've kind of lived by that rule of thumb pretty much the whole time.
I would say that that's definitely working for you. And I think that authenticity is something that people crave. And I think that's obviously what makes you so relatable to people. So definitely.
And you know what?
Like, not like we need our permission, but still.
I'll still sometimes get people call me a homer or whatever on Twitter. And it's like, that's okay. Like, then I'm not for you. And that's fine. Like, I, you know, some people want, you know, straight and narrow from sports broadcasters, and some people want authenticity and fun and whatever. And everyone's allowed to like what they like. And, you know, I've grown up a lot, I think, in the last 5 years. And I'm just at a point where, you know, if whatever excites you, follow that. And if it's not me, like, that's okay. That's fine.
Mm-hmm. All right. So from your social media bios, we understand that you love chips, potato chips. So what is your go-to flavor of potato chip?
This might be a question that I get asked more than anything, than any other question. I swear. Almost every interview I do, people ask me for my favorite chip. I swear.
Okay.
And, you know, my answer is always different, because it's kind of like, it's like music. It's like clothing for me. Like, it depends what kind of a mood I'm in. The only thing I will say right now, my favorite chips are these Quest protein chips, which I know people that have never had them are going to be like, ew, healthy protein chips. Like, oh, how could those be good? I'm telling you, they are life changing. They're so good. There's protein in them, which makes me feel better about eating like 5 bags at a time. They only come in like Halloween size, like snack size bags. And they have all these different flavors, and that is like my number one right now. They have like a cheddar and sour cream flavor. That's my number one. But my most controversial potato chip take is that, like, all dressed chips just aren't that good. Like, they're fine, but they're overrated. And only Canadians will understand all dressed. I don't think all dressed exists in America.
I don't think so. I don't think so. I mean, I like them. But it's like, if there's like nothing else really there.
Yeah.
I don't know. My personal favorite is like, my personal favorite is like sour cream and onion is Ruffles, I think are mine. And that's amazing. That's a danger for me, because I can't not eat the whole bag. So
anyway, sour cream and onion is an all time classic. Like, if we're going to be like your classic go-tos, never a disappointment, Ruffles sour and cream is in that list.
Yes. So we're still like kind of on this sort of same vein. Like, you travel so much, right? And you live in the States now. So is there anything that you can only get in Canada that you really miss when you're away? Or like when you come home, you basically make a beeline for that thing.
Oh my gosh. Okay. There's a few. I spend my off seasons predominantly in Nova Scotia, and I really like Donairs. A good Donair in Nova Scotia, I'll get that pretty quick. I love Swiss Chalet. Like, Swiss Chalet is so good. Their fries are so good. So that's one. And the sauce, the Swiss Chalet, say that 10 times fast, sauce is so good. I actually haven't had Swiss Chalet in a minute. I need to have that. And then I will say ketchup chips, which I know is very, it's so stereotypical for me to say that, but ketchup chips, but I like the baked ketchup chips. I think Old Dutch makes them. I like those better than just your regular ketchup chip. So those would be my three.
All right. I'm not with you on the ketchup chips one, but yeah, my dad used to spend a lot of time out of the country too when he was retired, and that was always his first thing when he came home. He's like, "Let's go to Swiss Chalet." Like that was his number one thing. Yeah, that's definitely what he missed the most.
All right. So last question we have for you is, we heard your spot on the JD Bunkus podcast on Friday. We were listening in and we were happy to hear that you were able to have some downtime, I guess, at an amusement park on your day off. And yeah, I was surprised that you love to ride roller coasters.
I do.
So can you tell our listeners, is there a favorite one that you like to ride over and over again, like when you get the chance? Like, is there a favorite park that you have?
Okay. So first I'll say it's a love-hate relationship. I don't know, like, I love roller coasters, but I also, like, almost every time, and my husband can attest to this, every time I get on one, that first initial climb, I'm just like, the whole time we were there, I was there with Emmett, my husband. I just kept saying to him, why did I agree to this? Why did I agree to get at the very front of this roller coaster with you? Like, he's like, you're the one that wanted to do it. Like, why are you talking like I persuaded you? Like, you wanted to do this. So it's a very interesting relationship, me and roller coasters, but I do love them. And you know what? I hadn't been to a theme park, I don't know, maybe in like 4 years or more. Like, I just have not been on a roller coaster in a while that I can remember anyways. So that was my first time being on coasters in a while. I mean, I used to go to Canada's Wonderland a lot as a kid. I always liked the Top Gun ride there. I don't know if it's still there. I always liked that one.
It's called something else now.
But yeah, I did like that one a lot. But the one that I just went to Busch Gardens in Florida because I've decided just on a whim that I was going to live in Florida for part of the winter. So that's what I'm doing right now. But we went to Busch Gardens and there, the roller coaster, I loved it. I wanted to keep going on it. It was called the Iron Quasi or something. Anyways, it's one of the tallest roller coasters in the world. And it's wood and steel. It's made of wood and steel. And it's the great combination of, like, it's got really high, really steep, like 90 degree drops, but it's also really fast. And so normally when that happens, like, the roller coaster is really rickety and, like, you feel like your brain's been, like, tossed around. This one was, like, really smooth. I rode it from the front and the back. I think I like the front better. but yeah, it was, if anyone is in Florida this winter or is taking their family to Disney or whatever, and you go to Busch Gardens and you like coasters, do the Iron Quasi, whatever it's quasi. I don't know what it's called, but it's good.
Oh my God.
Second best is the cheetah one.
You're talking about the Top Gun one at Canada's Wonderland. There's, like, a hilarious picture because JD was talking about how he's, like, always the one that has his eyes closed.
Yes.
So I could really relate to that because on that Top Gun ride, my husband and I, when we were first dating, we went Canada's Wonderland together. We went on that ride and there's a picture, you know, they snap the picture.
Yes.
And so there's this picture of him and, like, he's just like, like this. And I'm like, it's just the juxtaposition of me totally terrified and him like overjoyed is just hilarious.
There's, like, two very opposing feelings on the coaster, but
totally.
I was shocked that Bunkus hates coasters like that. That surprised me about him.
Yeah, I was surprised by that too. Like, just listening to him for, like, that, because, you know, I've been listening to you on the Good Show, like, even Andy Walker before that, back in the day.
Sports teacher.
So oh, that's crazy. I never would have, that did surprise me. And I mean, I don't know him as a person, but just from, like, you know, just seeing him as a, you know, the on-air personality that he is.
That is who he is.
I would never have guessed that.
He is one of those people, like, he is exactly the same on and off the air. And I mean that as, like, the biggest compliment.
Well, he's another person that, you know, walks that fine line of, you know, showing his fandom, but still, you know, being, you know, an unbiased reporter when it counts. Like, he's so good at that too. So anyway, that's all we have for you, Jackie. We are overjoyed that you were able to fit us into your schedule and so grateful.
Yeah,
to
thank have you so much.
Oh, honestly, it was absolutely my pleasure. So thank you for having me on. I'll come back anytime. And I love that you guys are doing this and just covering the Leafs every week. It's awesome. Or every couple of weeks.
Thank you. Thank you. And we will hold you to that. So maybe closer to playoff time would be another great time to have you on. So thank you again. And we will talk to you again soon.
All right. See you, ladies. Go Leafs. Show.
So thanks again to Jackie for joining us. She's a Leaf fan, right? She loves the Leafs and her favorite player being Darcy Tucker. I'm sure there's a lot of listeners out there that also have Tucker as a fan, but it was great to have her on and just get her insight on the game and just her profession too, being a sports journalist and in the States. And I really like talking to her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it was really, really great. She just exudes the passion that she has for hockey in general and also for the Leafs. And I just love her authenticity. She's such a relatable person. And she knows her stuff too. Mm-hmm. So, it's
it was
great.
Funny when she was telling the story about like growing up in that. Yeah. And it was exactly like us. It was just like how we talk hockey with our male counterparts. In my case, I was trying to like draw the girls into it and get the conversation going with the girls. But and then she managed to make a fantastic career, really successful career out of it. So that's
more to come for her, obviously. So the future is definitely bright.
So the Leafs are now heading off to Sweden in the NHL Global Series. Their next game in North America will be on November 24th in Chicago, and it's a back-to-back with the Penguins on the Saturday night, November 25th. So we'll see how that goes coming back from a long trip overseas. But Ladies Talking Leafs will be in Stockholm reporting on the Leafs and all the NHL events. Again, don't forget to hit that subscribe or follow button wherever you listen to our show, Apple, Spotify, and on social media, YouTube, X, Instagram, Facebook, and Threads. Our handle is at LTL1917. And also on the Believe Network, you can catch our show there. And don't miss any of our road trip reports from Sweden. Also, a reminder to be sure to leave a rating or review and let us know what you think of the show. It's easy on Apple or Spotify, and it's important for our show to get more exposure as a source for Leafs content, and we thank you for taking the time.
And another way to help us out is by visiting our Ko-fi page at ko-fi.com. You can follow us there, and if you choose to, you can support the show by buying us a coffee. Any donation goes towards helping us produce the show and making it even better for you. So you can find the link to our Ko-fi page on our show notes or in any of our social media profile pages.
And we want to thank our healthcare workers and first responders for everything that they do.
And we thank you, as always, for watching and listening to Ladies Talking Leafs, presented by Bet Online. Till next time, go Leafs, go.
Go Leafs, go.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.